Welcome to the Jewish Exponent podcast. I am your host, Jared Safran. We are here with U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania, Bob Casey. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Jared, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. So, Bob, you've been out there a lot lately with the Jewish community. Obviously, Pennsylvania has a big Jewish community. Philadelphia is one of the biggest Jewish communities in the world, but I want to focus on three primary topics here today in our interview. The symbolic role that you have taken on as a senator, putting yourself out there with the Jewish community, domestic anti-Semitism and how you can address that as a senator, and Israel as well. So let me start with the symbolic. You went to the March for Israel in DC in November. You spoke at the rally against anti-Semitism at, or excuse me, the March for Israel was in November. But you spoke at the rally against anti-Semitism at Road F Shalom in December. You visited a JCC in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh, I think yesterday or a couple days ago.
Couple days, yeah.
Yes, yeah, okay. So why is it important to you to not only support, but to show up for the Jewish community post October 7th and as you run for re-election?
Well, Jared, I think it's really important to show solidarity with the Jewish community.
Yeah.
The good news is, I think there's a wide support across our state, even before the horror of October the 7th, but I think ever more so since then, because when an ally that has so many Americans and Pennsylvanians with roots in Israel. When that ally is under attack, as Israel was and still is, it's critically important to show that solidarity. And it's also, I think, important in this debate we're having across the country since October the 7th. I've been saying over and over again, I don't want to spend too much time on this point, but just want to make a brief point about a lot of people, I think, in the way the news is covered and the way we have our debates in the United States, it's as if the horror of October the 7th was a one-time event, meaning that more than 1,200 people were massacred, and all of the horror that I have seen in the video presentations that we had the privilege of seeing a couple of months ago, horrible though it was and disgusting though it was, but a lot of people are debating what's been happening since then as if the threat was over on that day, that it was one attack and it was over. And then everything since then is the debate about what's happened since the 7th. This is an ongoing threat. It's a clear and present danger from a terrorist organization, Hamas. And it's critically important that we set the record straight. And sometimes the only way to do that is to have public appearances and demonstrations of support for the state of Israel and the Jewish people. But it's obviously important, even if you're not engaged in debates or trying to put facts on the record, it's just important to show that solidarity with a nation, with a people, and especially with those Jewish members of our society who have relatives or connections to some of these hostages. We still have a little more than 130 hostages, roughly. That's the most recent number.
Yeah.
And so that horror is still ongoing of those hostages being detained.
What kind of a message do you try to put out at these events when you spoke at Road F Shalom? What kind of message are you trying to put out to Pennsylvanians, to voters?
Well, part of it is to focus on what's happening in the Middle East and what's happening in the conflict, to support the state of Israel's efforts to destroy Hamas. That's part of what we've got to continue to engage in, because, as I said, these people have short memories and people can move on and think, well, why don't we just not worry about a threat like this? We have to make sure that we support Israel to fully prosecute the effort to destroy Hamas. But the other point I was making at Rosh Shalom in other settings is what's been happening here in the United States when it comes to anti-Semitism, because that debate is or that controversy, I should say, and that horror of anti-Semitism has to be something that we focus on and speak directly to,
right?
Because again, sometimes the narrative here can be misleading.
Yeah, there really are two parts to this, as you've alluded to. There's domestic anti-Semitism, and then there's Israel. Since October 7th, you've publicly advocated for increasing appropriations to the Office of Civil Rights to investigate claims of anti-Semitism on campus, which of course has been the hotbed of U.S. anti-Semitism. In addition to that, are there any other campus strategies and strategies in general that you might advocate for to address the post-October 7th crisis of anti-Semitism?
Well, in addition to the civil rights appropriations proposal that I've made, which is to provide the level of funding that the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education is requesting so they can conduct these investigations on college campuses, especially it applies to other education settings, but especially where we've seen so many horrific displays of anti-Semitism. And too often by university leaders, a casual response to that. So the funding would do the following, would provide the Office of Civil Rights with the funding so they can do an investigation. It's not just some broad ranging investigation. It's a very specific, even technical investigation to make a determination about whether or not there is a hostile environment. They're the two words that are most important. Hostile environment on that campus for Jewish students. And if they make that determination, then there are consequences for that college or university. So the good news here is the investment we have to make is in the tens of millions to help the Office of Civil Rights, which, by the way, has been badly underfunded for years. So if they want to investigate racism as it relates to a Black student, they're underfunded to do that. Right. If they wanted to investigate Islamophobia, they're underfunded to do that. But with all of the horrific manifestations of anti-Semitism, they need this help. So I'm hoping we can get bipartisan support for funding. Sometimes funding isn't bipartisan, but we're going to work on that. But I think in addition to that, it's using the voice that any public official has and the voice that I have is important, but also to think more broadly, I think, as we go forward. What more can be done on college and university campuses so we can have debates without having anti-Semitism hang over the debates we have on campus? There's so much we can debate on these, that students can debate on these campuses, but we don't have to tolerate or accommodate anti-Semitism to have a free and full debate on public policy issues, whether they're domestic or international.
So the last couple of weeks, anti-Semitism in the Philadelphia area has died down to an extent, and officials at the Jewish Federation think it's because colleges have been on winter break. So do you think if we address the colleges as like the core of this, maybe the problem fades a little bit or a lot?
Well, there's no question that those settings have been a real hotbed.
Yeah.
But I think it goes beyond those settings.
Right.
You know, when the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, made that determination between October 7th and a period of time after that, maybe a month and a half after that, they determined that acts of anti-Semitism had increased just in that time period by almost 400%. It was 380% or something like that. Mm-hmm. We have a broader, I think, societal problem.
Right.
With anti-Semitism, but when there are venues or places where we're seeing it arise most frequently, and manifest its evil and its ugliness, I think that warrants more attention than probably we were willing to give it before. And look, I stood on the Senate floor back in December of 22, talking about anti-Semitism and cataloging some of the examples then.
Yeah.
The leading and most horrific example, of course, was the Tree of Life Synagogue, but that was a long time ago where we thought the increases then were dramatic. If anything, it's a lot worse now.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about Israel now before you have to go. You were criticized in an October Washington Times op-ed by Matthew Brooks, the CEO of the Republican Jewish Coalition, for voting for the Obama administration's nuclear deal with Iran, for failing to support a bill that would have sanctioned Hamas and denied it access to loans and credit, and for failing to support bills that would have allowed state and local governments to divest from entities that supported the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. So, what is your response to those criticisms, and what do you think the US should be doing in this moment to support Israel?
Yeah, first, I think if the name of the organization of the guy that wrote that letter was the Jewish Coalition, I think it would have been a different op-ed.
Fair
But
enough.
because the word Republican was in it, you can imagine what it was. It was a hit piece because I'm a candidate for re-election in 2024. That's why they did it. So I think most people see through that. But even when you get into the details of it, I've been a strong supporter of efforts to combat BDS and have a long record, if either a voting record or a co-sponsorship record on bills to do that. Now, a lot of people criticized me when I supported the Iran nuclear deal, and they're free to do that. And people disagreed about that. We had a lot of Democrats who supported, some who didn't, and that's I don't mind engaging in that kind of debate, but to somehow accuse me of, because I supported the Iran nuclear deal, to start blaming me for everything that happened after it, especially happened since October the 7th, is really, really pernicious and I think dishonest. So I think most people get that, and you could, a lot of people, even people who disagreed with the Iran nuclear deal, including members of the Trump administration like General Mattis, who became Secretary of Defense Mattis, urged the then President Trump at the time not to withdraw, because they thought that would lead to what I think transpired after that, which is Iran, after waiting about a year after withdrawal, started enriching again. So you had the threat of the development of nuclear weapons being much more prominent than it was with the agreement. So even people that disagree with the deal would, I think, scratch your head and wonder whether or not we should have pulled out. But that's legitimate debate, and there's nothing wrong with that. But to smear me because of that, I don't think most people believe. I also think when people that in our state that know my record, that goes way back from my early days as a senator supporting funding for Israel. The most recent example was the memorandum of understanding signed in 2016 by the prior administration, prior to President Trump's. To support Israel's defense and to support Iron Dome and the other ways that Israel can defend itself. So all of that support, whether it's funding or supporting multiple measures to sanction Iran, even recently supporting efforts to do that. So I think when the full record is in front of people, I think they'll make a different conclusion than some Republican operative.
Fair enough. What do you think the US should be doing in this moment to support Israel? Because that's obviously a very complicated issue.
Well, the most important thing is to, in addition to the obvious support that is rhetorical, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's very important to public officials to use their words to support Israel. But look, the most important thing when you're a senator or House member is how you vote. That's how you demonstrate support, and that support we have an opportunity, I should say, to manifest that support in this, what I hope will be an upcoming vote on the supplemental legislation. So it's about Ukraine funding for Israel, and the Israel money is, or funding is a big number, north of 10 billion, so almost 14 billion, I think, at last count. It's a big number, and Israel needs it to prosecute the war against Hamas. So that funding opportunity is critically important. It's important to note as well that bill, there's a lot of coverage of it because of the debate about border security policy. There's a lot of funding for the border that'll be really important and necessary. But there's also humanitarian support that'll help the people of Gaza. It'll help the people of Ukraine and other places around the world. So that's probably the most significant vote in the near term, to support Israel as it takes takes continues to take on the effort to destroy a terrorist organization.
And what do you say? Because there, I think there's a contingent, at least in the Democratic Party, that has been pretty vocal against Israel, whether that's elected officials or on the ground. It's probably a combination of the two. What do you say to those people?
Look, some people have called for, some people have called for ceasefire. Some people have called for a whole set of proposals, have proposed a whole set of ideas, and that's that. It's fine to have a debate about that. But look, at some point you've got to take a position, and I think a lot of the calls legislatively for ceasefire are just wrong. I wish the same people, not just here in Washington, but around the country, who are calling for ceasefire when it comes to what Israel does is tell Hamas to engage in a ceasefire. They started this on October the 7th. They brutally massacred 1,200 people, citizens, innocent people. And I saw not all, but a lot of the video. And it was a kind of terrorism I've never seen. I'm not sure anyone has. Right. You know, usually a terrorist will attack a people to intimidate them. This was much more than that. This was terrorism that had as its objective to destroy the Jewish people, not simply to attack a nation, but to destroy the Jewish people. And the way that they engage in that after killing people, the way they celebrated every death, the way they started screaming epithets at dead bodies, showed me that this is a different kind of terrorism, a different kind of or level of depravity that I'm not sure we've seen anywhere in the world. So making sure that people are aware of that reality, and supporting the effort to make sure that Israel doesn't have to live with a terrorist organization, well-funded and well-armed and well-manned, right on its border. You can't accommodate that going forward in Gaza.
Senator Bob Casey, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jared.